I've got to take a moment before we get started today to let you know that I have two incredible investment opportunities for you this month. We're accepting investors for the first one right now. In partnership with Five Talents Commercial Real Estate, I'm excited to offer you the chance to invest in 279 apartment units in McAllen, Texas. You'll start receiving distributions after two full quarters' time. With distributions over 9% after year one and an internal rate of return of 13.68%, this is a passive income opportunity that you do not want to miss, not to mention the tax benefits involved. The McAllen Apartment Investment is a 506c offering, which means it's only available to accredited investors. Space is limited, so it won't be long before this opportunity has passed. You'll find more information by clicking the investment portal link in the show notes. The second offering is in self-storage, and it'll be available in the next couple of weeks. I'm excited to share more with you about that one, but I can only legally do that if you're on my investor list. To get started, just click on my calendar link in the show notes to schedule a call with me. Now is the time to take charge of your financial future. Get ahead of inflation and start building passive income and growing your wealth today. Now, on with the show. Welcome to the Plan B CRNA podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Jones, and I'm so excited that you're here. The Plan B CRNA podcast is the only show made specifically for nurse anesthetists who are exploring options outside of their traditional career paths. This is the place to expand your mind and your goals as we uncover new ways to produce side income together. Journey with me as I go down various rabbit holes to explore the best Plan B options for you. This episode is brought to you by OnCall Capital. OnCall Capital is dedicated to educating CRNAs and other healthcare providers about investing outside of the traditional stock market. OnCall Capital also provides opportunities for you, yes, you, to create passive income and generational wealth while also lowering your taxable income through investments in the apartment and alternative investment spaces. If you haven't hit subscribe yet, make sure you do that right now so that you don't miss an episode. Thanks so much for joining me today. And now, on with the show. Welcome to the rabbit hole on the Plan B CRNA podcast. Throughout my journey in finding a Plan B, I've gone down numerous rabbit holes to figure out which one works for me. Since I've done some of this research already, I only think it's right to bring that information to fellow healthcare professionals to help aid in your own search. As always, it's important for you, the listener, to do your own research and form your own opinions. Everyone's situation is unique, and a Plan B that works for one person doesn't always work for another. Self-awareness is the key in any decision you make, since you must have an accurate grasp of your own strengths, weaknesses, and goals. All right, let's get to it. Without further ado, our rabbit hole for the day is dun, 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 self-storage investing. Now, for those of you who receive my newsletter every month, you'll know that I'm a big fan of true diversification. That is, diversifying your investments into asset classes that are outside of the traditional stock market. A big focus of that is apartment syndications, but those aren't the only real estate assets that can help you diversify and smooth out your overall returns. From office space to retail and mobile homes to industrial, there is a ton out there to check out. But one of the most lucrative assets available is self-storage. I spoke about this in a recent YouTube video where I compared and contrasted self-storage with multifamily investing. Now, there may be a little overlap here with that video, but today's show will be a dive further down the self-storage rabbit hole. So let's start with some of the basics. What qualifies as self-storage? As with other types of real estate, there are different types of self-storage units out there. Drive-up units are what folks usually think of when they think of storage units. These are rows of storage buildings with doors that roll upward to the top of the structure. And they're usually located on road fronts, and they maximize accessibility for customers who frequently need to access their units. Security measures may vary, but they tend to be the cheapest option due to minimal cost structures, maintenance, and staffing. Climate-controlled storage has grown in popularity over the last few decades. These types of units are used to store items that must be protected from extreme temperatures and humidity. Think of things like furniture, documents, family heirlooms, and even classic cars. These facilities can charge a premium due to fulfillment of a specific niche in the market and services and security that are above and beyond the standard drive-up facility. Vehicle storage facilities cater to folks who have a car, boat, RV, or other vehicle that they need to store. These places are often, but not always, outfitted with climate and temperature controls. They may be located near harbors, racetracks, airports, or other places where the specific vehicle may be used. And mixed-use storage is a trend that's also gaining in popularity. This type of storage simply combines storage space in a building with other retail or commercial businesses. There's a building space here in town that comes to mind. There's a Total Wine and More and a Chef Smart on the top level with a climate-controlled storage facility in the bottom level. As more retail space is available for cheap, we're seeing more and more of them converted into storage facilities. Now, for many real estate investors, self-storage is an appealing asset class because there's large income potential with low overhead, fewer construction costs than other real estate types, and relatively low ongoing management. In fact, a small to mid-sized self-storage business, you know, pretty much anything under 300 units, can be nearly self-sufficient, requiring only part-time management. Since there are no residents on the property, there's less emotional equity and fewer things that can go wrong with the buildings themselves. They utilize basic construction components without the need for a bunch of sewage pipes or complex electrical systems. Not to mention, you don't have to worry about problems with appliances and toilets. Leases are month to month, which can be both good and bad. Because those who rent storage can be more transient in nature, that can make fluctuations in occupancy more common than in other asset types. However, it also allows self-storage owners to capture rental rate increases faster than other asset types as well. Due to these factors and more, the self-storage industry has seen a recent expansion. Surely you've noticed new units being built seemingly everywhere. Does this mean it's no longer a good time to invest? Is there still room for the industry to grow? Well, when it comes to these types of questions, I like to look at the numbers. In 2018 and 2019, these were unprecedented years for the industry, with nearly 70 million square feet in storage coming online each year. That number dropped to a little over 60 million square feet in 2020, with a similar number expected for 2021. This brings the total amount of self-storage in the country to around 1.9 billion square feet in 50,000 facilities. Now, that's a lot of storage. However, the vacancy rate for these units has continued to drop over the past 4 years, reaching an all-time low of 5.5% halfway through 2021, with around 10% of all U.S. households utilizing some kind of self-storage space. Now, this is good news for investors. As of 2019, 73% of self-storage facilities were owned by small operators, including small investors who may own one or two locations or even mom-and-pop operations. While these numbers are steadily dropping as more institutional investors enter into this space, it's still much higher than in other real estate asset types like multifamily and retail. This means that there's often a lag in rental rates and inefficient operations that can be improved upon by new ownership to drive net operating income upwards. The typical storage facility has a break-even occupancy rate to service standard debt of roughly 45%. Now, this means that if you have occupancy for half of your storage spaces, then you can cover your expenses. For other real estate classes, that number can be 65% or more. The most common reason to rent a storage space is insufficient storage space at home. The second most common reason is relocation. As millennial households age and expand, they often seek different living accommodations in suburban neighborhoods. The transient nature of their employment and the continued migration patterns will create demand for self-storage in the years ahead, according to the annual PricewaterhouseCoopers Emerging Trends in Real Estate report. Now, what does all of that mean? Well, renter demand is expected to continue outpacing supply into the near future, even as some pandemic-related factors dissipate. So what are the different ways that you can invest in self-storage? Like other real estate, there are a number of various ways to get involved. Number one, self-storage real estate investment trusts, or REITs. These are companies that primarily invest in real estate assets. REITs must invest at least 3/4 of their assets in real estate, derive at least 3/4 of their income from real estate, and distribute at least 90% of their taxable income to shareholders. These are available on different stock exchanges and through your traditional brokerage accounts like E-Trade or Schwab. And while these are considered to be tax advantaged, those advantages aren't the same as actually owning the real estate. You do not get pass-through benefits that allow you to count paper losses from depreciation. There are risks involved with self-storage REITs. Rising interest rates have a negative impact on REIT stock prices, particularly that of U.S. Treasury bonds. You may also find that you are at risk for oversupply, whereby the properties eventually exceed the market's demand. Self-storage is cheap to build and barriers to entry are low relative to other real estate. REITs that use a lot of debt to finance their growth may have financing risk, where they have a hard time meeting interest obligations during turbulent times. And they also face economic risks. Since they're leased on a month-to-month basis, it's easier for tenants to vacate when they need to cut back. This can potentially leave shareholders holding the bag. Dividend yields are typically higher here than your average stocks. There are five major storage REITs: Public Storage, CubeSmart, Life Storage, Extra Space Storage, and National Storage Affiliates, with an average dividend each of 4%. Compared to the S&P 500 average yield of about 1.8% and below for the last year, that's actually pretty good. However, compared to other types of passive self-storage ownership that we'll discuss, these dividends are actually pretty low. Number two, independent ownership. These are active investors who most often stick within a local geographical area. Self-storage itself is cheaper to buy than most other types of real estate. So depending on the area, you can purchase dozens of storage units for the same price that you would use to purchase a quadplex or an eightplex. This makes it easier for mom and pop investors to own their own cash flowing facilities with minimal overhead. Since self-storage doesn't take a lot of time for management, it's not uncommon to see an individual investor own a few self-storage facilities in a given local area. There are several steps you can take as an active investor. You'll likely need to utilize online resources like LoopNet.com, Remax.com, or a licensed commercial real estate broker to find properties that fit your criteria. Most active investors tend to stay local with their search so that they can self-manage as needed. Good help can be hard to find in this sector, so make sure you have a backup management plan in place. Once you find a property, you'll want to find out what the rents are for various units and how they compare to competitors in your area. That will tell you what kind of upside you can expect. For instance, if the owner charges $30 for a 5x10 storage unit, but competitors are charging $45, then you have a potential 50% upside in your rents. Also, by looking in the last 3 years of cash flow and the current storage unit rent roll, you can determine whether cash flow is going up or down over time. If it's dropping, you might want to get some more information before you make that offer. And if it's increasing, you might want to be ready for competition in purchasing that property. You should also perform a market analysis of the surrounding area. Job and population growth are important to look into. You should also look at the average size of a home in the area, because the smaller the homes, the more demand you'll potentially have for your storage units. Some areas have demand for vehicle and RV storage, while coastal markets may be great for boat storage. Finding the right unit and space mix is necessary to maximize your investment. Next stop, financing. You can look into conventional lenders, SBA or USDA loans, new construction loans, if you're adding more units or building from the ground up, hard money loans, and other forms of loans. Number three, syndications. These are a great way to gain exposure to the self-storage market without being actively involved in the acquisition or management of a facility. As a passive investor, you can benefit from high-quality self-storage teams that are making what's known as a consolidation play. As I mentioned earlier, the self-storage industry is pretty fragmented. The top five players in the space only have around 20 to 25% of market share combined. Smaller teams are initiating aggressive acquisition strategies by buying up mom-and-pop facilities in order to turn them around, thus increasing profits and gaining market share at the same time. Remember, syndication is just a fancy word for group investment. The acquisition team pools funds together from passive investors in order to purchase facilities and fund improvements. Those investors are rewarded for their contributions through distributions and equity returns on any future property sale. Distributions for these investments can be in the 10 to 15% range, depending on the offering. This means that a $100,000 investment would net you between $10,000 to $15,000 or more in passive income per year. Sale prices of self-storage facilities are rising too. The average sale price per square foot has risen from about $82 to $118 in the last 7 years, as more investors realize the opportunities in the sector. As a passive investor, you receive pass-through tax benefits from owning real estate. This means that you benefit from cost segregation and bonus depreciation that results in paper losses to offset your passive income. Self-storage syndications are often small to medium-sized deals that are set up as 506B offerings, meaning that accredited and sophisticated investors alike can invest. I offer these types of self-storage opportunities to on-call capital investors. In fact, I should have one available in the next couple of weeks. If you're interested in learning more about these opportunities, you'll need to schedule a call with me using the link that I've placed in the show notes. They really are a wonderful way to passively diversify your real estate portfolio. And of course, though, with any syndication, it's important for you to do your own research on the team itself and any investment that's presented to you. Number four, self-storage funds. Now, these are another great way for investors to passively participate in the self-storage market. Self-storage funds often seek to raise a certain amount of capital to acquire multiple assets. A recent offering I found was $50 million being raised in order to acquire 15 to 20 assets in various markets across the U.S. Unfortunately, these types of offerings aren't available for just anyone to invest in. Because there's so much capital to be raised for a fund, these are 506C offerings that require you to be accredited in order to invest in them. Most will give options that are similar to apartment syndications in terms of return structures. You may have the option of higher preferred cash-on-cash returns and no upside, lower cash-on-cash returns with upside from the sale proceeds, or a blend of the two. You can expect the distributions to be around 7 to 10%, with overall returns to approach 13 to 18% internal rate of return. A quick Google search for self-storage fund can provide you with several options, but be careful here. Individual funds may have different tax benefits or fee structures depending on how they are set up. So when it comes down to it, if you're thinking about investing in self-storage, you have to make the decision about whether you want to go active or passive. While being active is really about the systems that you have in place, you may not want the hassle of owning and managing your own facility if you happen to be a busy professional. If passive is the route that you want to take, there are several options to choose from with varying degrees of research required along the way. As always, I've included some resources in the show notes to help you along your journey. AJ Osborne is a great resource in the self-storage space. His book, The Investor's Guide to Growing Wealth in Self-Storage, is a fantastic read that breaks down the ins and outs of the industry. You can also take a listen to his podcast, Self-Storage Income, for more information or check out the links that I've provided in the show notes. That's going to do it for this rabbit hole. I'd like to thank you for listening to the Plan B CRNA podcast. If you enjoyed the show, make sure you hit subscribe so that you don't miss an episode. I'd also like to hear from you. If you have a question, comment, or rabbit hole topic that you'd like for me to cover in a future episode, just make sure you rate and review on your podcast player. I check those all the time, and I cover those questions in future episodes. If you'd like to connect with me or learn more about OnCall Capital, make sure to find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, or visit my website at www.oncallinvestments. Until next time, this is Bobby Jones signing off. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the Plan B CRNA podcast. If you haven't already subscribed and reviewed the show, I'd be honored if you took the extra time. It really helps to expand our reach and get the word out about the show. If you're a CRNA who is interested in sharing your story on our podcast, I'd love to have you. Please email me at bobby@oncallinvestments.com for more information. This episode was brought to you by OnCall Capital. They are dedicated to helping providers like you develop passive income and generational wealth through investments in the apartment and alternative investment spaces. Feel free to check out their website at www.oncallinvestments.com and subscribe to their free educational email series. You can find OnCall Capital on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also check out our YouTube page, where you'll find all of the show episodes along with other educational videos. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.